Good morning, everybody. Good to see you. Don't feel you have to turn your chair around to see me. You know what I look like. And you're best off with your back to me. So hope you're well. There's a couple more drinks still coming out, but if you haven't got one, it's on its way, I'm sure, hopefully. But great to see you. Today we are starting a new series. We just kind of finished Easter. Today is technically Low Sunday. And we'll be thinking a bit about that as we go through our time. But we're starting a new series called Only Human. You know, often we use that word or phrase, I'm only human, as like an excuse why we can't do stuff. But what I want to do in the next few weeks, and we'll go through what the weeks will look like, is to think a bit about our bodies. And it's going to be really uncomfortable because we don't like talking about our bodies, do we? We have a very complicated relationship with our bodies. And so the first thing I want you to do is to talk to the person next to you about a bit of your body you hate. No, I wouldn't do that. But we all have them, right? I don't mind hating parts of my body. I mind when people tell me they hate parts of my body. Yeah, people poke me and tell me I'm fat. I know that already. I don't need your help, but thanks. We have a very complicated relationship with our bodies. And I guess the question these next few weeks is, what part, if any, does our body play in our spiritual life? Or is the spiritual life just a spiritual thing? And I want to sort of like unearth a few things, which maybe there'd be things you've never thought about before. And once you've thought about them, you will never be able to be the same way again. So if you want to put your boat in the water or go on holiday until sort of the end of July, this might be a good time to do that. But I've got this suspicion that there's a curiosity about our bodies, ourselves. And even the language we used about ourselves is complicated. And we're going to think a little bit about that from a biblical point of view. But we're going to start thinking about it from a philosophical point of view. Don't shut the doors. Lock them quick. It's going to be okay. I don't want you to leave. I want us to think about our bodies. You know, we know that social media attacks our bodies all the time. You just have to open an Instagram post and you see what is classed as the perfect body. Or you need to get a six-pack, or you need to have this wobbly bit taken care of. And it may well be that, and when you think about your own bodies for a minute, there are parts of your bodies which cause you a great deal of distress. They don't work in the way you want them to. They may be wobbly in the wrong place, or there may be not enough hair, or too much hair, or they may be breaking down, and your mind or your spirit wants to do something and your body won't behave itself. And often we talk about the body in a third person, or we talk to parts of our body. Do you ever do that? Okay, just me. When your foot goes to sleep and you say, come on, foot, you talk to your body, right? Or you're going up a hill, Clay's Hill, the longest hill in history. And you say, come on, you can do it. Who are you talking to? You're talking to your body. So we're going to be thinking a bit about how we think about bodies. It may well be that bearing a child has meant damage to your body. Or surgery or accident means that you cannot bear a child because of your body. And what part does that play when we think about being human in our faith? And how do our bodies impact the way we see ourselves and we see God? Now, this has always been a thing. It's very easy to knock social media or the current world we're living in. But actually, it's always been an issue with our bodies. If you think back even just to Rubens, the picture of Rubens, not of Rubens' picture. There's no boobs in this. It took me a long time to find a picture like this without any boobs in it, I can tell you that. But don't go looking in my internet history. But I thought bums are okay. So this is the 16th century. It's a picture of beauty. And the lady is, I don't know what words to use, curvaceous, plus size. She's slightly larger than other ladies might be, and pale. Because being pale in the Renaissance period was very hard to do. Because it meant you had to stay indoors. And if you stayed indoors, it meant you had money. And in a disease-ridden, poor community, to be larger and pale showed healthiness, ironically. Today, it's different. It's the opposite. Where skinny is all small boobs, that's what it's about. And there's been a lot of backlash about what is beauty and how is that too skinny? By whose standard is that too skinny? And who are we to say that someone else is too skinny or too large? And what are the criteria we use? This has always been a conversation that's been in the marketplace, if you like, and we're going to be thinking about that from a perspective. Because as the world has getting increasingly making us feel worse and worse about our bodies, what does the church say? Pretty much nothing. And that's what I want us to think about. Not just so we have a healthier body image, whoever we are, however our bodies work, but actually see how that relates to the way we see God and the way we use our bodies in our spiritual lives. So Low Sunday is historically, traditionally, a time when we think about, ironically, physicality. The resurrection of Jesus is not just something that's done and dusted and put away for another year. We're thinking about the resurrection of Jesus and how so much of many of those resurrection appearances involved food, a sign that there is a physical resurrection, that stuff is important in the kingdom of God. We think about the barbecue on the beach in the end of John. We think about Thomas, and we'll think about him in a moment, who said, I won't believe unless I can touch it for myself. And Jesus allows him to put his hands, can you imagine that, putting his fingers in the hole in his hands? So there's something physical happening in the resurrected Jesus. He kind of bears the marks of his previous life, but is transformed. What does that even look like? We'll be thinking about that as we go through our series. And if you have a tradition which is creedal, if you come from an Anglican or a Catholic background, there'll be creeds maybe that you've said over the years. And take, for example, the Apostles' Creed. It says Jesus was crucified, died, and was buried, descended to the dead. On the third day, he rose again. And then later, and we believe in the resurrection of the body and the life everlasting. It's something that's said every week in the Anglican Church. What does it mean? The resurrection of the body, the kind of the importance of our stuff. The Nicene Creed, an ancient creed, says we look for the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come. And then you have those kind of weird stories around resurrection, Matthew 27, when the dead breaks forth from the tombs. Ever heard a sermon on that? No, it's like a zombie apocalypse that's happening when Jesus comes back to life. If anyone wants to preach on that, then we got next Easter, you fill your boots. I've never preached on that. What does it mean that the dead are breaking forth from the tomb if it's not something to do with a precursor to resurrection? Our bodies are really important. And yet, so many of the stories we tell about heaven and eternity, certainly the jokes that we tell about St. Peter waiting for us at the gates, or even the way we talk about heaven and eternity, is often disconnected from our bodies. It's nothing to do with our bodies. That's just the outsideness of us. It's the essence of us, we might say, when we shed our mortal coil. And the danger with that, and we're looking at this morning, is it actually negates a really important part of our existence, our embodied life, and our relationship with stuff. Now, there's a hymn. We don't sing it here, but I have heard it sung. And these are the words. They're on the screen, and listen to it. It's got lovely harmonies. Heaven is my home. We might say amen to that. But earth is a desert drear. Where were they living? Obviously not on the south coast. There's something about people that have suffered, people, especially in liberation theology, there's a massive theme about leaving our bodies behind to inherit a spiritual heaven. If you think of the Negro spiritual and trying to escape the reality of our embodied lives in order to inherit something which is spiritual. This is from a Mennonite background, this hymn. And that speaks volumes about the way that the Mennonites were persecuted. And so to try and a lot of the times what we sing, and there are other hymns that are very popular, and I didn't want to sort of touch them because they're sensitive to folk who love those hymns. But some of the theology kind of says, when we're done with this stuff, we can go and be heavenly with God. I mean, they say it a bit more poetically than that, but that's the point. And I'm trying to get into, in this series, what does our embodiment mean? Andy, can you go back easily, and I can just talk through roughly where we're going with it. Okay, so... Okay, so the first one we're looking at next week, Canon Nigel's coming to talk about the image of God in us. If God said, let us make them in our image, what does that even mean? How does that work? And that's going to be an interesting time next Sunday. And then we're going to be looking at the incarnation, that Jesus becomes human. God with us physically, corporeally, he ate and slept and went to the loo. And all those things that we do, Jesus does too. God with skin on. What does that even mean? Not just that he came to rescue us, but what does it mean about our creation and how God feels about creation to come become part of it? A lot of the early church fathers have loads to say about this, and we'll be thinking a bit about that. God with skin on. And then there's this kind of thing about which me is me. Who am I? Am I an embodied soul? Am I mind, soul, spirit? How does that even work? Which me is me? Do you ever have that feeling of saying, oh, this is me here. This is actually me living right now, me? Do you ever... No, okay. Okay, I'm obviously living in a different world to you guys. Okay, which me is me? Then we're going to have a Songs of Praise at the end of May. Let everything within me. We're going to use our bodies. And sometimes when we use our bodies, we lift our hands or we use our voices or we close our eyes. We use our embodiment to worship. And we're going to be doing that at Songs of Praise at the end of May. And then we're going to be thinking about what it means to be fearfully and wonderfully made. That's another week, and then keep going through. Okay, then we're going to get into the kind of long grass. So death and dying, bodies and soul. And we're going to be doing a Sunday and then a joint growth group about what it means to live and die and what place does our bodies have in eternity and where does the soul fit into that. Another great week to have a week off if you're not coming. This is the week to have a week off. Humanity Plus, bodies and technology. Don't roll your eyes. If you've got a filling in your head, or if you're wearing glasses, or you've got maybe a bionic hip, or you've got a hearing aid, you are already Humanity Plus. You're already becoming technological. You're becoming a cyborg. It's official. It's really happening. So rather than just kind of say, oh, that's science fiction, it's actually science fact. What does it mean? Do my glasses restore my humanity or add to my humanity? If I can't hear and I use a hearing aid, does that make me more human or restore my humanity? And then eventually, when robots become sentient, when they can start thinking and feeling like we do, what does that say about the image of God and souls? So this is really, you won't get this anywhere else, folks. You can go to any other church and you're welcome. But we're going to be thinking a bit about that. And for those who've got a good memory, my master's dissertation was on this. So that's going to be fun. My body is not a prayer request. This week, the beginning of July, we have Dr. Ellie McLaughlin, who's coming to talk, a lady who has suffered a lot with her own body, thinking about disability and our bodies, when our bodies go wrong, and what does that mean for eternity? And are our bodies a prayer request? Would somebody who lives with Down syndrome, will they be Down syndrome in heaven, for example? I know, you've never thought about that. Someone who uses a wheelchair, will they continue to use a wheelchair in heaven? And who are we to make those kind of decisions? So thinking about how disability works in our embodiment, is it something to be shed off, something to be embraced? And we'll think about that as we go through. I know. Can't God change me? Anyone ever frustrated that God's progress in our lives is not fast enough? Okay, again, just me. I wish you guys were here with me sometimes. Can't God change me? That's going to be the end of July. And then there's one more, I think. Living within limits. Being limited is a good thing. It's a good thing. How do we learn to live within limits? We can't fly. That's a limitation. We invented something, not us here, but it was invented something that we can fly. Our limits are great things. How do we learn to live within our limits rather than complain about what we can't do? So the idea of all this is to try and understand something about our relationship between our spiritual selves and our corporeal, our physical, material selves, and spoiler alert, they're all part of the same us. And how do we learn to cherish those things? So it's going to be fun. I can see some of you are not convinced by that, but that's okay. That's never stopped me before. So if we just skip on a couple of slides, Andy, what's the next one? Okay, so let's think about a bit about dualism. So dualism is this kind of idea, and we're going to think a bit about this together, that basically the body is bad and the spirit is good. Now, if you've done any philosophy, I am sorry, I've just muddled a very complicated idea. But the point is that, and we see this often in church life, that the body is that which we need to escape from. And the spirit is of that which is good. And we can say, well, God is spirit, and those who worship him in spirit and truth. Yes, but God's also made us physical and corporeal and material, and we have to somehow attend to that. And so I want us to think a bit about how we spend our time promoting what we might call the spiritual life and actually push aside the physical life, the life that we have. And that's in its most simple form. The stuff is bad and the spiritual is good. It's that dualism. There's two things happening there. And I want us to think a bit about where we see that happening before I explain where I think it comes from. Okay? And I'll give you an idea of this. We teach our children when they pray to do what? Close their eyes and put their hands together, which is probably the most disembodied activity in the world. All your faculties, you need to turn off. That's what we say. You shut your eyes and you put your hands together, and in your head, you do all the work of prayer. It's not an embodied experience at all. Or there'll be people who will say to me, you're not here today. On the 30th of April, we have our Hub Fest when we're going to do a bring and share, and I want you to bring the best food you've got, and we're going to share it together. Some folk will say, I won't see you that week. I'm coming back for the spiritual services the week after. As if eating together and sharing fellowship is unspiritual. It's like a dualism. Do you see that? So I want you to think for a few minutes. Don't worry if this is going to be, is this hard? Okay, I get that. But there's a couple of examples. A couple of clues you might think around preaching or discipleship themes. What do we teach people about faith? What do we do when we pray? I've given you a really good idea about that. Practices around funerals. Are they disembodied? That's a particular interest of mine. How we worship. Do we ever disregard our bodies in worship? How do we do that? Attitudes to food, sex. Okay, you get to sex, then I'd like to hear about that. But think a bit about how that dualism works in practice, maybe in the church, maybe in our thinking, maybe in the world, where the body is seen as something which is to be disregarded or beaten into shape or jettisoned, and the spirit is good. Now, I get this is quite a new way of thinking. I understand that. Just spend 5 minutes just chewing around it, or if not, just make plans about what you're going to do until the end of the summer, and we'll come back in a few moments. Okay? Brilliant. So hopefully you've had a dig around and you began to see perhaps how this dualism kind of works out, and we'll be doing this a lot in the next kind of few weeks, seeing different ways in which we tend to think in dualist terms. It's true to say that the phrase dualism can refer to lots of things. It just means kind of seeing two sides and tending to favour one side over the other. It can be applied to lots of different areas of faith and of philosophy and life. So behind it for me is a concern of how many times do we talk about prayer and faith and mission and the future and God's presence, and how rarely we talk about the menopause, getting old, dying, what happens when our bodies don't do what we want them to. And is there any relationship between those things? I guess that's my question, because I think there is. It's part of ourselves. And the danger is living in this world which is so focused on the perfect body. And I'm sorry, this is not good news for you, that we don't have that perfect body. And if truth be told, nor do those models. They're airbrushed, I know. It was a surprise to me too. But actually, it's all about the reality of our lives. And as always, one of the things that drives me is how do we make faith authentic? How do we sort of get behind that kind of Sunday school answer and say, what does that even look like? What does it mean in our very complicated lives? I think there's lots we'll come back to in terms of death and dying. That's something where I think we see a lot of dualist talking. We might think about people who we might have thought to ourselves, well, that's not him laying there. He's gone. And I always want to say, well, who is that then if it's not him? And I don't laugh. I just say it pastorally, you know. But who is that? And we talk, well, when I shed my mortal coil, well, that's nothing to do with the Bible. And it's all to do with, do you know who? Before Shakespeare, Plato. Plato. So I want to think a bit about Plato this morning, but I'm gonna bring us in gently. I know, just when you thought it couldn't get worse. It does, I know. I've left Descartes out of it because I figured there wasn't time for Descartes. We'll come back to him another week, maybe. I want to show a video clip of a film called Free Guy. If you've not seen Free Guy, you need to. It's on Disney. I always like to educate folk about this sort of thing. We see so many spiritual truths in modern media. And I know you think this is entertaining, but for me, it's actually a profoundly theological experience. So to see how the world understands itself through films, and we see it all the time through films and novels and all kinds of stuff. And just a bit of backstory so you know what's happening. It's only a 2-minute clip. This guy, his name is Guy, helpfully. He doesn't actually exist. He lives on a computer program. He's part of a video game. But he thinks he does exist. And you'll see in the clip that he's just a player in one of those video games that people play. And people with glasses, well, they're the real people. And they see a very different world in the video game than the people who live in the game. I told you it was straightforward. It'll all become clear. But the question I want to bring out of this is, what is real? Where is real? And who is real? Here's the video clip. The point is that he's living in a video game. He thinks it's real, and it's not real. And his friend says, well, even if we're not real, doesn't matter. You're real friends. You're real people. And he works out that if he's not real, then he can't die. And if he can't die, then how do you live? It's a really interesting set of questions. It's on Disney if you want to watch it. If you are more kind of nerdy than that, then anything about The Matrix is on a similar kind of line. If you really, really want to nerd out, there's a guy called Slavoj Žižek, who's a Slovenian philosopher, works out of London. He's writing about this sort of thing the whole time, about what is real. Where do we see reality? And Žižek's not a Christian, far from it. He's a Marxist. But he's saying there's something in religion which has to be more embodied. That's interesting, coming from a Marxist. We have to reconcile the fact that we are not just spiritual or soul. We are embodied people. And that has massive implications. But Plato is to blame for this stuff. Because so often, when we think about things like this division we have, the soul being good and the body being bad, because after all, our bodies are wearing out. Some of you tell me that. In fact, a lot of you tell me that every week. It just doesn't do what I want it to do. You're talking about yourself in the third person. That's a worry. But it's true. Maybe we can't hold things like we used to, or we can't run like we used to. Or when we get out of bed in the morning, we think, what happened in the night? I feel like somebody's beating me up. Or maybe you think it was 4 or 5 times I got up in the night. And that never used to happen. Our bodies are wearing out. What does our faith say about that? And Plato would say, well, that's your earthly coil getting ready to be jettisoned by the spiritual. And if you like philosophy, you might remember the story or the allegory of the cave, where he talks about the spirit being real and the body being just shadows. That the stuff around us, the physical, that's passing. That will one day be buried somewhere. But the real you, that will last forever. And a lot of the Christian thinking was based around this too. And a lot of the first theologians of the church, they were trained in Plato talk, Plato thinking. It comes out a lot. And later on, In the Renaissance, we have a similar thing with Descartes, who changes the subject a little bit, but along the similar kind of lines. The physical is like an echo of the spiritual, and that resonates with us because that's what we've been told all these years. That this outer side, the bit of me that you can now see, that will one day go, and the real you will be set free to be with Jesus for eternity. That's what I was told. That's Plato. That's not biblical. And now you're thinking, oh no, then what is biblical? We'll come to that. Don't worry. God loves stuff more than we do. The incarnation's a great example of that. The plans for resurrection is a great example of that too. And this immortal soul idea that Plato started, the church ran with it. And there's a lot of truth in it, and we'll come to that in weeks to come. But thinking a little about this physical body, which is temporal, it's corrupting, it's not going to be here forever, so that therefore it's not as good as the soul, which is eternal and will last forever. Well, that's what eternal means. So if you're thinking that this is kind of everything you've ever been told about life after death, it's because it is. It's exactly how we've taught in the church over the years. And that's not saying that not all of it is true, because I think a lot of it has a lot of merit. The problem is it tends to make us very negative about our bodies. And when those bodies give up, oh, I don't care what you do to me, I'll be gone. Anyone ever thought that? It matters massively what we do with bodies. Massively how we look after bodies, and how, not perhaps in the Christian tradition, but you think of the Jewish tradition and the Muslim tradition, how they care for dead people is astonishingly ritualistic and loving and careful, because bodies are really, really important. And I guess today my point is, thinking in the light of the resurrection of Jesus, is that that challenges us to rethink our relationship with the world in general and with our own bodies in particular. We need to think about how our bodies fit into the whole of our lives. Now, I'm very well aware that for some of us that's like a, oh my goodness, what's just happened? That's okay. I'm on holiday tomorrow, and when I come back, we can pick this up. Don't worry, it's a long burn. But it's really important we start thinking about the stuff that God's made is good. Your body is good. And you might want to start by doing that. You might not want to look in the mirror. I heard of somebody this week who has no mirrors in the house. And judging by their hair, because they can't stand looking at themselves in the mirror. We have a complicated relationship with our bodies. But our body is part of us, a very important part of us. So when we think about Thomas, like we're going to do now, we see that the physical is front and centre in the resurrection. And that when the others met Jesus and Thomas wasn't there, he says, unless I feel it for myself, unless I sense it with my senses, the physicality, the materiality of Jesus, I won't believe. And James is going to read John chapter 20, 24 to 29.
One of the 12 disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. They told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he replied, "I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand into the wound in his side." 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. The doors were locked, but suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. "Peace be with you," he said. Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and look at my hands. Put your hand into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe." "My Lord and my God," Thomas exclaimed. Then Jesus told him, "You believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing me."
I've always felt a bit sorry for Thomas. I think he gets a bit of a bad press. I don't think it's unreasonable after the trauma that they've been through to then be told that, oh, he's actually risen. Well, I could do with some evidence of that. That's not unreasonable, is it? You've longed for that, haven't you? Have you never prayed that prayer? God, could you just make that a little bit clearer for me? Just give me a little bit more to go on. I don't think, maybe we should call him a devoted Thomas rather than doubting Thomas. Because when he, and I wonder what actually happened. Did he actually see Jesus and put his hand in his wounds? Or did he say, okay, I've seen enough? I don't know. But let's think about this for a few moments, and we'll do this on our tables. Here's some questions to get your head around it. So we have here the physical resurrection of Jesus. Thinking about what we've been trying to talk about today, about this, what is real and how important this reality, this embodied life is. Think about that story of Thomas and think about the importance of material. Stuff is the technical term for it. Material in God's eternal plan. So just sort of riff around that idea. The idea that actually, are we just floating souls that are going to be sitting on clouds playing harps forever? I really hope not. Or does the resurrection, the physical resurrection of Jesus, point to something else? Spoiler alert, it points to something else. And how we might understand the importance of our bodies today. These are like massive issues. So the fact that you might take a little while to get into them, that's absolutely fine. But they're really important issues as we start to reconcile who we are as embodied people. So think about the resurrection of Jesus. Think about there's something different about him, isn't there? Because he kind of enters into rooms without using the doors, and yet they can still touch him. So there's a transformation that Paul talks about in his letters that's really important in resurrection. We don't know all the answers, but nor can we break it. Okay, I know sometimes we feel like we're going to break it by saying the wrong thing. We don't know. So let's have a go at imagining what it might be like and what it speaks about our bodies today. So just spend maybe 7 or 8 minutes on that, and we'll see where we go with that at the end. Okay? I'll come around this time and make sure you're on topic. All right? So I sense last time you might have drifted. There are a series of little books you might have come across called the Grove Booklets. They're not very long. They're only like, you know, skinny ones. But their subtitle is seldom the last word, but always the first word. And the idea is they're not trying to solve any problems. They're just trying to show you what the issues are. And for me, this is kind of what we're doing here. And if this is a bit unsettling for your body and your soul, then I'm sorry. Well, no, I'm not sorry. It's really important we think deeply about these things, even though we can't reconcile it all. You know, in the Orthodox Church, they have this really interesting concept that because the creeds and the scripture become the kind of informative, authoritative documents of the church, if it doesn't mention anything you want to think about in terms of faith, you're free to think however you want because you can't break it. And I love that sense that I'm not sure about the authority, but we'll come back to that another day. But I love the sense that, you know, you can't break the things of God. That he's given us minds in order to think deeply about stuff. And the fact we can't reconcile everything, there's loads of things we can't reconcile in our lives, not just our bank accounts, lots of things we can't do. Lots of things we can't do. So we just need to embrace it a little bit. So it gives us a freedom to wonder and to explore things. So if you go feeling a little bit discombobulated, I don't mind that. I'm quite happy with that because it shows that we've actually energized our minds and our bodies and our souls. One of my favorite theologians, Jürgen Moltmann, he thinks a bit about the end of Revelation, you know, when we read it often at funeral services, he will wipe every tear from their eyes. There'll be no more crying or pain or death. And he has this lovely phrase, I find it really moving. He says, he may wipe every tear from their eyes, but their eyes are still wet. And I love that idea that how we experience life now will somehow continue into eternity. And even though we're not sure what that might look like, that yes, there may be no pain, no crying, no death, but it will be a remembrance of what has happened in this life, not just a kind of like a Men in Black moment where your mind is completely erased. Another film reference. I'm really bad at this, aren't I? Sorry, I should... Oh, you got a theologian though too, so that's all right, that balances them out. So to think about our physical selves, and especially in this kind of the only resurrecting person we have to think about is Jesus. And we have to trust there's something in the prototype of Jesus' resurrection which is for us as well. And there's a song, Casting Crowns, have a song. I like Casting Crowns a lot, but I don't like this song. The only scars in heaven won't belong to you and me. I thought, oh, I'm not sure that's theologically sound. I think Jesus shows us that as he carries his scars into heaven, we will carry our scars into heaven as well. One table said it's very difficult when, if you've been brought up to kind of despise the flesh, not focus on your appearance, not look after your body, to then be told that actually we now need to, you know, see this as part of who we are. And how do we make those sort of changes? I think there's no straightforward answer. But I think starting by saying this is connected, that I am creation. I'm not just me, but I'm part of God's creation. And to sort of side with when we see the wonderful blossom coming or the cloud formation over the downs, that I'm part of this. I'm part of what God called good. And maybe that needs to be written on your mirror, and so that it reminds you that, see, I'm good. I'm part of God's creation. I'm made in God's image. And this is okay. And maybe to be the kind of friend to yourself that you are to other people, that would be a good start. But making those connections between our physical selves and our spiritual selves. And this has taken, you know, over 2,500 years of our culture to develop. We're not going to undo it in an hour's service. But I think asking the right questions is really, really important. And as ever, I'm around afterwards if you want to chat a bit more about it. But I'm hoping that as we sort of build on this in the weeks to come, we can see different ways, things we haven't thought about even, about our physical selves. This is not self-indulgent. It's actually honouring the person that God's made you to be, which is probably the best act of worship we can actually ever come up with. So it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be kind of be the best version of yourself kind of talk, not at all. But saying actually you're made in God's image, that means something. How we cherish ourselves is how we cherish each other. If we don't look after ourselves, then we're unlikely to look after each other very well. Final prayer, and then we'll go and lay down in a dark room. O God of timelessness and time, I thank you for my time. And for those things that are yet possible and precious in it, daybreak and beginning again, a word of forgiveness and sometimes a song for my breathing, my life. Thank you for the honesty which marks friends and makes laughter, for fierce gentleness which dares to speak the truth in love and tugs me to join the long march towards peace. For the sudden gusts of grace which rise unexpectedly in my wending from dawn to dawn. For children unabashed, wind rippling in a rain puddle, a mockingbird in the darkness, a colleague and a cup of coffee. For all the mysteries of love, for music and silence, for wrens and Orion, for everything that moves me to tears, to touching, to dreams, to prayers, for my longing, my life. Amen. Amen. Folks, thanks for engaging in this. This is really exciting stuff. It may not feel like it today, but it really is, really is. If you've come ready to contribute a couple of quid towards the cost of coffee and your cake, then the till is open. If you want to catch me on the way out, then do. I won't be here next week, but Canon Nigel's going to be thinking about the image of God in us. And that's the next block that we're building towards, this idea of being only human. Thanks for sharing today. I'm sorry you're going home with lots of questions, but just allow them to kind of bounce around in your hearts and minds. And we'll think about them when we gather next. God bless you all. Thanks for coming.